Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for your architecture firm. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Nikki Rausch, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm excited to have you here. You are an expert in sales.
I am.
And architects are terrible at sales. They don't like sales. They don't want to do sales. And I know over the years, we've gotten better at it. We've started to understand that architects need to focus on sales. But I always love connecting with people like you who sort of understand that about us and could sort of take it all and make it easily understandable and teach us how to do sales in the best way possible. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation.
All right. Well, good. I'll do my best to bring tons of value to the listener.
All right. I love that. Nikki is a visionary CEO of Sales Maven. She stands out for her exceptional skill in demystifying the often misunderstood art of selling. With over 25 years of experience, she empowers entrepreneurs and small business owners like us with strategies to sell effectively and authentically. Nikki is also the author of 3 insightful books and hosts the Sales Maven podcast, where she offers entrepreneurs and business owners insights and practical tips for mastering authentic selling techniques. And I'm really excited about this conversation. But before we jump into talking about sales, which I actually like talking about sales, I'm a unique architect. I want to know more about you before we do that. So go back as far as you want to go back. When did you discover your passion for what you do today? And maybe even who or what inspired you to move in that direction?
Well, if I go way back, I had a college project. Well, actually, I'll go back just even a couple months prior to that. I got married at a very young age, moved to Washington State in the Seattle area, and needed to just get a job quickly before I re-enrolled back into continuing on in my college education. And the job that was available, it was like one of those holiday jobs. It was working a kiosk in the middle of the mall, and it was selling, I haven't told this story. I don't know if I've ever told this story. It was selling leather goods. So purses and bags and wallets and, you know, all these leather goods.
So those are the little carts in the middle of the mall.
Yeah. That they put out right, just during the holiday season, and then they go away.
Yeah.
And the owners of this really small company, they paid commission. So I was making minimum wage. And this was like, in the way back, like late 1900s, you know, I'm old, so.
The late 1800s, I love that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like when they covered wagons and stuff. Yeah. No, that's 18.
Yeah, that's the 1800s. So, you know, late 1900s, minimum wage was pretty minimal. Like, I don't even know if it was $5 an hour at the time, but they paid commission that if for every hour you worked, if you sold a certain amount, once you made over that amount, you started getting commission on your sales. And I was starting to double and triple my hourly wage because I found having conversations with people felt easy and it was fun. I totally believed in their product. So that was my first experience with commission sales. And I was really hooked because I loved
the idea.
And
how old were you when you started that, when you discovered that?
I was 20.
Okay.
I was 20. And I just thought, gosh, I like the idea of controlling my own income. I really like the idea of that. Then I was finishing my college degree in business administration. I had a college project where we had to go out into a company and get to know something about every department, come back. And it was like 80% of our grade or something was based on this presentation. And the company that my partner and I picked was a technology company kind of really revolutionary technology that they were selling at the time. It's not anymore, but at the time it was. And we got to go in there. We learned about their hiring practices and we went back to give this presentation. And part of my role was to talk about their hiring practices. And so I was thinking I was really clever. And I even like got the newspaper that had the job ad. They were advertising for sales reps because this was, again, back late 1900s. They used to put ads in papers to get people. Like, that's how we used to get jobs.
What's a paper?
I know, exactly. So one of my fellow students came up to me afterwards and said, hey, can I take that ad? I'm going to apply and see if I can get a job working for this company. And he did, and they hired him. And then somebody else from my college class went and applied, and they hired him. And I thought, if they'll hire those two knuckleheads, they might hire me too. So I did. I applied. I got a job there. And that was my first professional sales job, working for this small technology company. And I moved my way up there, became their national sales manager.
What were you selling?
I was selling projectors and flat panel plasmas that used to sit on top of overhead projectors, like the math teachers used to use them to put the math problems, you know, hook it to the computer.
Yep.
Yeah. So worked there, worked my way up, then eventually moved to the manufacturer level, worked for one of the larger companies in the world and had a lot of success there. And while there, very male-dominated industry, I was super curious about how to up my sales game. And I first got exposed to neuro-linguistic programming. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but anybody listening?
I know what it is, but I would love for you to just explain that a little bit.
In the most basic way, it's the study of communication. So neuro, the way we process information in our brains. Linguistics is about language. And then the programming part is about habits and patterns. And so when you learn how you show up in the world in conversations and how you think and how you process and how you speak, and you start to notice how other people show up in the world, you learn how to add flexibility to your behavior to put other people at ease. Makes the conversations more comfortable, makes people be more willing to engage in conversation, be more open to hearing your message.
Yep.
So I started studying NLP to help me in sales, which it really did. Because again, I was in this industry where it was mostly men and I was young at the time and going into these large organizations, like one of my favorite deals I ever closed was like to NASA, you know, so you're working with these high up, high level people and trying to speak their language and put your product in a way that makes it interesting, that they're open to considering it, all of that. So anyway, had a lot of success there, was in that industry for almost 20 years, and then started looking around about 20 years in thinking, is this it? Like, is this it? Is there anything else left for me? Or am I going to still be doing this when I'm, you know, 40 and 50? And I ended up leaving my corporate job and I went to work with my NLP teacher to help her grow her business. She had just moved up to Washington State at the time. And that was when I started hanging out with entrepreneurs because I was selling her programs and, you know, going out and introducing people to the concept of NLP training. And I started hanging around with women entrepreneurs. And what I found was they're super passionate. They are incredibly, you know, interested in being of service and making an impact in the world. But oftentimes they struggle to make money. And the reason they struggle to make money is because they didn't understand how to have effective sales conversations.
And you just described most of the people listening to this, male and female, listening to this episode, because architects feel that same way.
Yeah, it's a common thing. And so I just started, you know, anybody who was open to it, I just started kind of offering suggestions and advice and strategies just on the side, not as a business, but just wanting to, I really love being around entrepreneurs and I just wanted to hang out with them as much as possible because they're super passionate people. And I was somebody who thought I lacked passion because I was like, I don't understand this thing that people like, they follow their passion. I didn't even know what that meant. Yeah. So I started helping some of them and they started getting great results. And finally, somebody pulled me aside and was like, Nikki, why are you not helping people do this? Like, why aren't you teaching these skills that you make sales easy? And I thought at the time, like, that seems dumb. I don't think people would pay me money for what I have to share. And she convinced me that they would. And I took a chance. I started my business. I've now been in business for 10 years, having the time of my life.
Great.
Teaching people how to have really easy sales conversations that feel good, that are genuine, and don't really challenge somebody who is a little bit like, oh, I hate sales. It's not too far of a reach for them to start to learn some of these things and apply them and see results.
Yeah. Well, I think you're resonating with our listeners for sure,
okay,
because good. I think many of us feel that same way, right? We're a little uncomfortable about sales.
Yeah.
We know that we need to do it. We're not really sure how to do it. We've never been trained to do it. Architects aren't trained in business.
Yeah.
But we're passionate about what we do and we love what we do and we know that we serve the world
yeah.
and change the world with the work that we do. And so that's a real easy formula, right, to apply to sales once you understand how to do that.
Yeah.
So with the work that you do with Sales Maven, how do you do that? How do you train somebody? What are some of the things that people who are listening can do to do it better?
Well, first, I have a 5-step approach to a sales conversation. It's my signature framework. I call it the selling staircase. I actually wrote my 3rd book around it just to break it down for people. I truly think and teach that sales is something that you do with another person, not to another person. And most people who hate sales think that they have to do something to somebody. And of course, you would shy away from that because that feels a little manipulative and a little kind of icky, frankly. So when you start to learn that it's really about conversation, and when you understand where am I in the conversation and what is the logical next step in the conversation, it makes sales easier. So you're not trying to meet somebody and convince them to buy from you. You're actually meeting somebody, you're finding out, do they have a need or a want? Do you have permission to put an offer in front of them that meets that need or want? And do you know how to close the business from there? And so it really simplifies the process. And I love a structure. I don't know, maybe your audience does. I think architects.
We certainly do.
Right? You like a structure. And there are certain things that are like step by step. So that's why I teach these 5-step process. And I work with clients privately. And then I have a group coaching program. And then I offer some courses from time to time. But realistically, it's about finding out, who are you in the world? How do you want to show up? How can we use your unique style? And then how can you be more strategic in those conversations while still feeling like yourself, like you don't feel like you have to be a robot reading a script?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's dive into that a little bit and go through each one of those 5 steps.
Okay.
If you want to learn more about Nikki and this process, her website is yoursalesmaven.com and you can go there and check things out. The books are there, the podcasts are there, everything is there. So yoursalesmaven.com. What are the 5 steps?
So the 5 steps of effective sales conversation. Step 1 is introduction. So in that 1st step, the objective there is to make a powerful 1st impression because people are making judgments about you and you want to do everything you can to set yourself and them up to make a positive judgment about you and who you are. The 2nd step is create curiosity. This is the most missed up in the sales conversation. Most people, if you ask them, do you know how to create curiosity when you're talking about who, like who you are, what you do, who you serve? Most people look at me like, what now?
Yeah.
They don't even think about creating curiosity. And yet, if you're not able to create curiosity, it's very hard to get to the 3rd step in the sales conversation, which is what I describe as discovery. I call it discovery, but a lot of, I would think architects might call it a consult call.
Right.
Right. So it doesn't really matter what you call it, but the objective of that call is to find out what's going on for this person. Do they have a problem or a need? Ask really smart questions that plant seeds that start to demonstrate your expertise without giving away your expertise for free. So you ask questions that make people go like, oh, Mark's asking me questions that I don't know the answers to, and I need to know these answers. So I need to work with Mark. And then once you understand through the question process, through discovery, with permission, you move to step 4 in the process, which is proposal. Now, I know for architects, sometimes that is a formal proposal. This is a written contract, something you're going to put in front of people.
Right.
For, you know, other people in other businesses, it might be a little bit more casual. It might just be part of the conversation. But the objective in the proposal is to stand in your place of expertise and recommend the right solution to meet this need, regardless of, you know, what you think they're going to think about it, regardless of what you think they're willing to spend or invest with you. But you really have to stand in your place of expertise and be the expert and make a recommendation here. And then the 5th step in the process that goes very closely with step 4 is the close. This is the second most messed up in the sales conversation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will do a pretty good job maybe of getting through a few of these steps, and then they get all the way to the proposal and they miss the close. And if you miss the close, you have a very hard chance of ever earning that person's business. And the way you know you're missing close is if people are, you get a sense like, oh, this person seemed very interested and then they started ghosting me, or gosh, I was pretty sure we were going to do this deal together and now they've backed out in some way. Chances are you're not actually closing and you need to close, because until you close, it's hard to find out what the objection is. If you don't know what the objection is, you can't overcome it. If you don't know what's that one lingering question that you need to answer in order to earn their business, that usually, again, comes through the close process. So it's so important to close.
Yeah. And I think that is often the thing that architects miss, right? They go through this, they meet their clients, potential clients, they have these great conversations, you have this great chemistry, you go back to the office, you put together a proposal, you send it off, and you wait for the answer.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come. And you're like, why didn't they send me back a signed contract? I sent them the contract. They said they wanted it.
Yep.
Because we're missing a step. So let's go through the five steps in a little bit more detail.
Okay.
So some of these listeners can actually execute on it today.
Yeah.
I think that'd be awesome. All right. So intro, what do we need to know about introductions?
Well, again, I mentioned people are making judgments. That's just human nature. They're making judgments about you. So how can you set yourself up to make a positive first impression? Because they're going to make these judgments. So think about what's your environment, because first impressions are formed from them seeing you, from them hearing you, right? Like these things are happening in the conversation. So I know I worked with an architect not too long ago where we were talking about how she felt like she was losing deals. And we talked about this first impression, and we started talking about like one thing that she now does before she goes to meet with a client is she takes her car through a car wash versus showing up with a dirty car, right? Like these things, they're tiny.
Yes.
And you might not think that people are making judgments, but they are. So what do you need to do to make a powerful first impression? It could just be like showing up if you're meeting with a client virtually on Zoom or some other way, like, are you showing up ready for the meeting? Do you look prepared? What's going on behind you? You know, like, because they're making can they see behind you?
Right.
You know, are you trying to blur your screen because you don't want them to see behind you? That creates doubt. Like, there's all these things that you can do to make a powerful first impression. And one of the simplest ones, and you may or may not have noticed that I did this when you and I first got on the call, is introduce yourself.
Yes.
Like, yeah, your name is at the bottom of the screen, but introduce yourself, because they might not know how to say your name, right? Or it might feel awkward to call you by your name when you haven't actually initiated that. So all of these things matter. That can also happen on your website too, the first impression or what's being posted on social media. Like all of these things, they matter, they count. And I think sometimes if people would just take a step back and go, what is the first impression that people are having of me? And is there anything I can do to improve it?
Yeah, that's very intentional. That your brand is important, right? Because before they even talk to you, they're going to check you out. So what are they checking out, right? Those are the first impressions of your firm and what they learn about you. So your website really needs to look right. I love the suggestion about the Zoom call, because now very many of us are now having these meetings on Zoom.
Yeah.
What does the background look like? Is the dog barking? Are the kids sort of tugging on your shoulder? And some of that's okay, depending on your client. Some of it's not okay,
right?
Depending on your client. Yeah. If you're meeting in person, are you dressed to be the person that you expect the client to want to work with? Mm-hmm. Are your shoes scuffed, right? That's something that I used to do as a young architect. I didn't really care. My shoes were scuffed. And then I realized I should be wearing shoes that look like I'm a successful person.
Yeah.
And so that helped.
Yeah.
And so all those little things, the car you drive, whether it's clean or not, all first impressions. And I love that, because people make decisions, right? On that first impression, they meet you, they get some information, and they make a decision.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of a selling staircase, right? Because we need to get to the next step.
Right.
Right. If at first we have this introduction and right away they're like, they make a decision. I don't know. I'm not really interested in having this conversation. They still do, because they're going to be polite, but now you have a lot more work to do.
Yeah, they say it only takes a tenth of a second for someone to make that first judgment about you. And usually within 2 minutes, they've made up to 10 judgments. Like, that's not a very big amount of time. One thing I used to do when I would go into architect firms, we were selling product that actually fit in architect firms a lot. And when I would go into the architect firm, I would have to carry this huge case, and it had all this equipment with all these cables, and it was a lot to set up. And so I always knew, like, in that first 2 minutes, they were going to make some judgments about me. So I would just set my case to the side, and I would spend time connecting with the people initially. And then I would ask, would you be willing to give me 5 to 10 minutes to set up this gear? So if you need to go back to your desk and write an email or make a quick call, I'll be ready to go within 10 minutes. And then they wouldn't have to see me pulling out cables and crawling underneath the table to plug things in, you know, whenever I could do that, because I knew they were going to make an impression about me. And yeah, I could have gone in and been like, okay, let me just get set up. And now here they see somebody that looks like Pigpen, you know, from just like things going everywhere.
Yeah.
So you want to think about those things, because whether or not they're registering to the other person of like, oh, she's a mess, they are making those judgments.
Right. Whether we like it or not. I think that's so valuable right there, right? Even without getting into the other four steps, right? Being intentional about that first impression. Think about what you do from the very beginning, right? As soon as they make contact with you, on or offline, even before they meet you, what are they seeing? What are they interacting with all the way through to actually getting to the next step, which is creating curiosity, right? So we've gotten this introduction set up. We understand. We got that working. They love us. We're good to go. Now we're going to take it to the next step. And I've never thought of this, create curiosity. How does that work? And what should we be thinking about?
Okay, so creating curiosity, stick with me here for just a minute, Mark, because you might think you have a lunatic on the call with you, but we'll see.
Okay, I love lunatics. Okay, they're good. Entertaining.
All right, I'm in good company. All right, I'll take that. So when I talk about creating curiosity, I often compare it to the difference between how you call a dog and how you call a cat, okay?
Okay.
So I don't know, Mark, are you a dog or a cat lover by chance?
I have both.
Okay.
If I had to choose, it would be tough. If I was solo, if I wasn't married,
okay,
because they're all hers.
Okay, there's a good qualifier.
I'd probably have a cat because they're nice and easy and they just sort of hang out over there.
Yeah, there you go. Now think about it though. If you want to get your dog's attention versus your cat's attention, you don't call them in the same way, right? If you want to call your dog, you usually like change your pitch of your voice a little bit, and it becomes this like, come here, boy, right? Or like, let's go do something. And dogs love that energy. They respond to it. They don't even know what's going on, but they're so in already. So that's what I call dog calling energy. And what can happen sometimes when you're showing up either online or in a meeting or meeting somebody the first time, like you're so excited because you know you can help this person. Maybe you've driven by their project, or maybe you've got some insight into their project and you're so excited because you know like you're the right architect for them, and you show up with what I call dog calling energy. People will tend to push away. They'll be like, ooh, too much. It's coming on too strong.
Yeah.
And so the flip side of that, if you want to get a cat's attention, you can't call a cat, like I said, the way you call a dog. You might call a cat by going, here, kitty, kitty. Yeah. And cats don't even always even respond to that. Sometimes they just give you a look at you like
yeah, okay. What?
Right? Like, maybe. So when you're showing up to create curiosity, you want to think about being in catcalling mode. You have to have what I call here, kitty, kitty statements. And creating curiosity can happen in a bunch of different ways, but one of the easiest ways just to get you started on it is to think about how you answer questions. And if you can answer a question that makes somebody lean in and want to know more, you've created curiosity. If you are answering questions where they're like, oh my gosh, that was so much information, I'm so sorry I asked, right? That's dog calling energy. So how do you answer questions? Now, I'm going to offer your audience a little bit of a training on this. So we'll go deeper in the training, but just to give you an idea of it to get started is, what could you say right now if somebody said like, what do you find most interesting about my project? You don't want to like give this diatribe answer. You want to give an answer that's 1 to 2 sentences, 3 at the max, or you're in dog calling mode. three sentences at the max where you pique their interest. So what could you say? You could say, you know, I was particularly intrigued about this part of this project, and it got me wondering about what else is possible. Like if you answered like that, somebody might be like, well, what do you mean? Tell me more about that.
Tell me about what you might think right? about my like, project.
I'm interested to know. Or you could say, you know, I had some additional thoughts about that. I'm not sure if that's something you'd even be open to hearing. You say that to somebody and they're going to be like, I'm open to hearing it. What is it?
Right.
Right. So it's how you answer questions that can start to create curiosity. Now you can do this again in a lot of different ways. You can plant seeds. You could say, you know, I have an idea for you. You can even do this on social media. And one of the ways that you can create curiosity on social media is by asking a question. So that's kind of the flip of what I just said about answering questions, but you can also do it by answering a question. The way to create curiosity is to start by asking the question. So if you're going to do something on social and you want to post something, what's a question that you could ask that somebody would be like, not only are they wanting to answer the question, but then they want to read your answer to the question. So instead of just posting, here's what I know about X, Y, and Z, you could ask somebody, what do you find the most interesting about X, Y, and Z? Ask the question and then you answer, here's my answer. Because if they've got that answer in their head, they're more likely to then want to read your answer to see how does it compare to my answer versus just telling somebody what you know about something. Does it create any curiosity?
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. As an architect or firm owner, you might find yourself swamped with drawings that take up most of your day, leaving you with little time to manage your business. MGS Global Group can lighten your load by handling all of your drafting and rendering needs. Their experienced team of architects and designers can convert your schematic designs into DDs and CDs with minimal supervision. With expertise in industry-leading tools like Revit, ARCHICAD, and more, MGS is the perfect partner for managing your project spikes and urgent tasks. They work as an extension of your team and follow your standards to ensure the quality and accuracy of your drawings. Having served sole practitioners, small firms, and publicly traded companies since 2008, MGS guarantees you get the help you need right when you need it. Visit mgsglobalgroup.com and book your free consultation today. That's mgsglobalgroup.com. ARCHAT's Spec Wizard is the tool that will help you save time writing specifications. Going through the manufacturer's specification line by line to find the right product leads to frustration and errors, and that's where Spec Wizard comes in. It's a free, patented tool that allows you to select products and options error-free and generate a three-part specification in minutes. Go to ARCHAT.com, that's ARCHAT.com, and try Spec Wizard today. So how does that get us to the next step? Which I think many of us, this is sort of where we begin.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When we think about sales, it's that discovery call, right? Whether it's a telephone call or maybe it's an initial email or maybe it's their first meeting. How do we get from creating curiosity and how does that lead us into that next step of discovery?
So when you create curiosity, what tends to happen for people who are interested and are potential clients, from creating curiosity, they will start to give you what I call buying signals. Now, buying signals are verbal and nonverbal cues that people give that indicate interest. When somebody is asking a question about, like, kind of back to one of my examples I gave of like, you know, I had some thoughts about this. I don't know if you'd be open to talking about it. And they go, I am open to talking about it. And then you go, great, let's schedule a time to do that. You get it on your calendar, right? Then that's them going like, I do want that. Or if you say something, getting back to the social media post of like, what do you find most interesting about this? Here's my answer. And somebody goes, I'd like to know more about that. That's a potential buying signal. Okay, so then we can invite them to the next step. Or if they go, I have a project where that would actually fit, then we invite them to the next step, which is the discovery. Okay.
Okay.
So we're just looking for buying signals. By creating curiosity, we're seeing, are there going to be buying signals that come as a result? Then that leads us to step three, which is discovery. Like you said, that's probably where most architects are starting. is in that discovery. So again, whether you call it a sales call or a consultation call or a discovery call, it doesn't matter. But the objective here, first and foremost, is to create safety at the start of the call for somebody. And you do that by pre-framing. I'm happy to give you an example of that if you like. So you pre-frame at the start of like what's going to happen in the call. And then instead of trying to be the person who's trying to prove how knowledgeable you are or how much you know about their project or how great of a fit you're going to be for them, what I really want you to do here is ask really smart questions. Questions that lead people down the path to going like, oh, you're definitely the architect for us. So they're creating that in their own mind based on the questions that you're asking. So these questions are going to be specific to you and to your business. Some of them, some of the questions are just straight up like, we got to get some answers to the question, like, right, what's the size of your project? What's your budget? What's your time frame? Those are all logical questions to have in the discovery. But there are some things, there are some questions that should be specific to you, to your expertise. So if you're particularly known for something, you probably want to form a question around it. And this is where I probably would need your help, Mark, of like, what would be a specialty of an architect that might set them apart from maybe all their competitors in the area?
Yeah, maybe they work with restaurants and they are skilled at developing specific relationships with the work that they do in the bar area. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that sort of what you're asking?
Yeah, exactly. And you help me here. So you tell me if this question would work or not. But I might say to somebody, how important is it to you that the architect that you work with is skilled in creating the right bar, since that's going to be a huge driver of revenue for you? So notice I planted the seed there, like I'm probably that architect.
Right. And connecting the revenue to the business owner, right?
Yeah. And that's something I know how to do. I've done before. That's why I'm asking the question. So we want to start to create these questions that get people thinking about, oh, maybe I hadn't thought about that I should really hire an architect that understands that. But because you've now asked the question, you've planted the seed in my mind that the architect I choose probably should be skilled in that area.
Yeah.
So those are what I'm talking about, those specific questions that fit for your business that start to let people go like, oh, nobody's asked me that. I've talked to two other architects. That never even came up. That sets you apart right away. Okay.
And I just wanted to point out also that what you're describing, those questions that you're going to organize, connect directly to your brand, right? If you've done that brand work,
yes,
which we've talked about many times on the podcast, if you've developed your brand and clients are resonating with you with the work that you're doing on the brand, then the questions that you're going to ask can come right from that work that you did from the brand, right? Understanding your brand story,
yes,
understanding what the right words on your website are. Those are the things that you've already done the work to differentiate yourself from a branding point of view. Now you're bringing them into the sales process and developing some questions that differentiate you to remind them that that's why you're special. And it sort of helps create that discovery process that we're talking about.
Yeah, you nailed it. That's 100%. Like, it's going to be easier for you to craft those questions if you've done all the brand work, if you know those things, if you've already got the phrases, and putting it in the form of a question versus saying to somebody, you know, what makes me a really good architect is that I understand,
right,
particularly how to design the bar. That's not as enticing versus asking it as a question and planting the seed for the person of like, ooh, I better be thinking about that.
Yeah.
That's going to generate revenue for me.
I love that. So switch from that presentation mode where it's all about me and what we can do for you, mm-hmm, presented in questions that then sort of triggers these ideas in their head that wants them to want more, right? You want them to want to go to the next step.
Yeah. And so once you've got the information that you need to decide, am I talking to a real potential client here? Does it make sense now to move to this next step in the process? Then that's what I want you to do. So you might have a set list of questions, and maybe you have a list of 20 questions, but you might get a sense 5 questions in, you've got what you need in order to make a recommendation or in order to move to the next step in the process. You don't have to go through all 20 questions.
Right. And in fact, you probably shouldn't go through all 20 questions. Right. Once you know that they're ready to move on, that's when you stop.
Exactly. So the way that you kind of move somebody to the next step is you issue another invitation. So I might say, you know, based on what you've already shared, I do get a sense that this is a project that would be a good fit for us. And is that something you'd like to, you know, kind of move this process or move to the next step? Or you might say, you know, based on what you've shared, I get a sense that this would be a project that we could support you on. Would you like for me to put together a quote or a contract for you?
Right.
And then based on what they share next, then we know, like, yes. Or maybe you say, you know, based on what you shared, I could see us doing this project for you, and we could do it in phases, or we could do it as one big project. Of those two, which are you most interested in? This is me like testing the offer,
right,
to find out like what are they really wanting. And then based on what they share, like, oh, we want the full project, or we want to see the stages or whatever that is, then if you're going to put together a formal proposal, here's the piece that I don't want architects to miss. Don't ever just send somebody a proposal and then wait to hear back from them. If you're going to put together a proposal, this is the language I want you to use. So if somebody says, yes, let's move forward, go ahead and get that proposal to me, I want you to say, great, I'll have that proposal to you by Thursday or whenever it is. Let's go ahead and schedule a circle back call to review the proposal together, answer additional questions that come up, and then talk about next steps for working together. Should we schedule that for Friday? Yes, great. Does 10 a.m. on Friday work on your calendar? Great, I'm going to send you a calendar link. Then you're not sitting out there going like, the proposal is out right in the world and I have no idea what's going to happen. The only way that you can make it easy for that person to make a decision to hire you is if you have that next step scheduled for them. So by having a time on their calendar with you, they're actually going to look at your proposal now.
Right.
Whereas before, they might not look at it for 2 months or 10 months or right, 2 years.
And I'm sure many listeners are nodding their head right now yeah, because that happens, right? You send it out and you just wait. And then you follow up because you didn't make the engagement. You're following up to try to get that call that you could have gotten in that discovery process or the proposal process. And now you can't get the call, right? Because either they're busy or they're not focused or whatever it is. It's not necessarily not that they don't want the project. It's that they're just not responding.
Yeah. And it really comes down to, I don't know, have you heard there's a lot of stats out there about the average adult makes a certain number of decisions in a day. Have you heard this before, Mark?
I've heard different versions of that, yeah.
Okay. So if you think about it, like on average, how many decisions do you think the average adult makes in a day? Like come up with that number in your head. And for the listener too, like think about your day. How many decisions do you think you make on average?
Thousands.
Yeah. Thousands. They say the average adult makes between 30 and 60,000 decisions in a day.
Yeah.
So when you send out a proposal and you have no next step scheduled with a client, it's not that they are not interested. It's not that they don't want to work with you. It's that they have 30 to 60,000 other decisions to make. And when you let 3 days go by, well, now you're at a minimum of 90,000 decisions that they have in front of looking at your proposal because they've moved on. Not because they don't want you, not because they don't need you, but because they have all these other things vying for their attention. But if you say, I'm going to send you that proposal on Thursday, let's talk on Friday to walk it through together. Then on Friday, you've made it easy for them because now the next decision for them is they live and breathe their calendar and they see on their calendar, they're talking to Mark at 10. Great. Here's the proposal. Let's walk through it together. Let's find out what questions we have. Because most people, I have a coach that used to always say this to me. He used to always say, Nikki, most people are one question away from hiring you. And my add to this is you have to give them the opportunity to ask you that question.
Yeah.
And the way you do that is through that circle back call, that reviewing of the proposal together. Because they might have glanced at the proposal, but they don't even know yet what their hesitation is. But if you walk them through the proposal and then they go, you know, this one thing, for whatever reason, it's not sitting right. And I'm not sure, like, what did you mean by this? And then you have the chance to answer the question and they go, oh, got it. Okay, let's go. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Not going to happen every time, but I can tell you it's going to happen way more times you're going to get a yes than if you don't do this.
Yeah. And everybody is so busy, right? And so having that one step added to your system that you don't send the proposal without having the date on your calendar, right? And make it contingent on it. I'm going to send you that proposal on Thursday. Let's set up a call on Friday to have that conversation. Who's going to say no? Right? Because they want the proposal and they're going to say fine. And in their mind, they're like, I can cancel it if I want to, but at least it's there.
Yeah.
And if you try to get it later, likely you're not going to get it because they're making 30,000 to 60,000 other decisions that day. And they're just busy, right? They're just busy. You just get pushed to the side.
Yeah.
And so I love that. That tip alone is so valuable. So that's the proposal, right? So we're preparing a proposal. We're setting up a date to review that proposal. We review that proposal face-to-face, whether it's on Zoom or in person. Then the most important step of the staircase, the close, so many of us don't do it right.
That's right.
What do we do? How do we do that? We send that proposal out. We have that call that we've set up. And now we're on that call. What do we do?
Yeah. So on the call, so you walk them through the proposal. You ask them what, if any questions have come to mind for you, if they haven't asked any. And then you say, so now after looking at this proposal, are you ready to move forward? That's a close. Now that's just one way to say it. There's a lot of ways to say it. But the most important thing is that you say it.
Yes.
Don't not say it. Don't wait for them to tell you, okay, I want to pay you all this money. I want you to issue that invitation. Are you ready to move forward? Should we go ahead and lock that in? You know, are you ready to sign the contract? Whatever that next invitation is, like you can ask it in a lot of ways, but the most important thing is that you ask it.
Yeah. And many of us don't.
Yeah.
So what if we ask it and they say, no, I'm not ready. I really like you and I want to review this some more. I got three other architects we're talking to. I want to get back to you. What do we do if they say no?
Okay. So if the client says what you just said, I have three other architects that I'm talking to and we'll get back to you. I would say, at what point do you think you'll have had those conversations with the three other architects? Can we schedule our next call now on the calendar?
So you do it again.
Yes, you do it again. You do it as many times as they'll do it with you. You stay in it as long as they're willing to stay in it with you. I personally don't believe in chasing clients, but I will schedule as many circle back calls as needed to a point to earn somebody's business versus like trying to follow up just randomly out of the blue from, you know, every 3 months. That's a waste of my time. And usually they just ignore you anyway. So as long as they're willing to say, oh, okay, yeah. Because I actually want to be the last person they speak to if possible. Because then I can overcome any objections. I can challenge anything that the other architects have maybe offered as a solution that maybe mine is a better fit. Or if it turns out it's not a right fit, then I can bless and release and move on and not have to spend any more time and energy on it. But I want to be the last conversation, if at all possible. And if they say, like, don't call us, we'll call you, I would honor that too. And I would say, okay, well, if I haven't heard from you in a month, is it okay if I just follow up with you one more time or something like that?
Right.
But then I'm pretty much blessing and releasing. Like now the ball's in their court. They own it. I'm not going to chase after them.
That's essentially saying no, right? After you send that final email or that final telephone call and they don't respond or they, right? Don't waste your time. Move on to some other potential client that is more likely to close.
Yeah. Yeah. Spend your time and energy on the people who are ready to hire you now. Doesn't mean they won't come back. You always want to leave the door open. Right. So I never say to somebody like, oh, you don't want to work with me now. Go kick rocks. Don't ever call me again. Right. Like, I don't mean that. I just mean, hey, you know, if the timing is not right, or if they say we're not ready to make a decision, I would say, at what point do you think you will be ready? And what additional information can I provide to help make that happen at this point? And if they say, there's nothing you can provide and we're not sure when we'll make a decision, then I'm going to say to them, please know it would be an absolute honor to work on this project with you. You're welcome to reach out to me at any point and I'll be delighted to hear from you. And that's me saying, here's the ball. You own it now.
Right.
When you're ready, go ahead and come back to me, but I'm not going to chase after you.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. The five steps, I mean, a little training course here for us. So valuable. I'm positive that we have architects right now writing all this stuff down, reworking their system. They're going to go out and crush it. So super interesting, super valuable. I appreciate you for walking us through those five steps. And so generous to share those with us because I know you train on them. I know people pay you to go through what we just went through. So
they sure do.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else that we need to know before I ask my final question? Is there anything else that you can share with our listeners of architects on what we should do or sort of just hit those five steps and you'll be good?
Here's what I would say, and maybe this is a little bit off topic, but never be afraid to ask somebody, what would it take to earn your business? If there's somebody out there that you would like to work with, maybe there's a builder or there's a designer or there's a whatever, and they're giving business to somebody else, and you think, oh, I could never get their business because they're already working with XYZ. Never be afraid to ask, what would it take to earn your business? And just see what people will say, because sometimes the answer would be, Mark, I didn't even know you were interested in working with me.
Right. You might be surprised what they say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt to ask.
Never hurts.
My grandfather always said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Super, super valuable. So, final question. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? What should we do first thing?
The first thing is your existing clients right now could introduce you to your next client. Make sure you're asking. So when somebody is giving you feedback, how much they appreciate you, how much they valued the work that you did for them, that's a great time to ask. So you want to acknowledge, thank you so much for that feedback. That means the world to me. Is it okay to ask, who else do you know that would be a good fit for my services? And would you be willing to make an introduction on my behalf? Those people can open doors for you. And when you have somebody that opens a door for you, you get to ride the coattails of whatever credibility they have with that other person, which might be your next big opportunity or two opportunities down the road or 10 opportunities down the road. Don't be afraid to ask that question either.
I love it. Great reminder. Great suggestion. Her name is Nikki Rausch. Learn more about Nikki at yoursalesmaven.com. Also, before we went to record this, you mentioned that we might have a little gift for our listeners. You want to share a little bit about what you have for us?
Yes. So if you were trying to write furiously and maybe didn't get them all down, I have a mini training on mastering the sales conversation where I do break down those five steps. I do give you the pre-framing language. There's some additional invitation language in there. So you can get that. This will just be my gift to you. You can get it by going to yoursalesmaven.com/entrearchitect.
yoursalesmaven.com/entrearchitect. We'll have a link to that in the show notes along with Nikki's website. Thank you, Nikki. I appreciate that offer. I think that you'll get lots of people taking you up on that. I think what you shared today was super valuable. So I appreciate you for coming by here, sharing this step-by-step approach to doing something that we're all not so good at, because I think we can get a lot better by just following those five steps. So thank you for coming by here and joining me at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. with weekly live group business coaching. Yep, we have business coaching there. Monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, 2 a month. So 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days. We'll give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember 3 words: love, learn, share. Have a great day.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects, you got anything? Yeah. I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season 1 featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris, owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, you know, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like, long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my God.
One that came out of nowhere.
Woo! It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it.
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.
Calling all small firm architects, it's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my 2 favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast, it's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill, is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.